Emergency management phases. Individuals and families should have emergency management plans, as can the healthcare facility and the community. A personal/family emergency management plan is designed for an individual's personal use. The plan should include a communication plan, a disaster supplies kit, and an evacuation plan. It should include provisions for backup care for children or adults, and pets, for which you are responsible in the event you are called in to work for an emergency during non-traditional working hours. Your personal plan should also include a supply of food and water, pet care, and out-of-region contact for your family, stores of medical equipment/supplies and personal protective equipment, PPE, and transportation. A healthcare facility emergency management plan is a plan that a healthcare facility would implement before, during, and after a mass casualty event. It is our main subject here. A community emergency management plan is a plan that a community would implement to prevent or control a mass casualty incident. It is a collaborative effort among traditional first responders, law enforcement, fire protection, and emergency medical services, healthcare facilities, public health officials, and other response agencies in a community. The IP is in a position to offer considerable expertise and knowledge to inform the development of emergency management plans. The following elements of an emergency management plan should receive input from the IP. Pre-emergency preparation. Facility assessment/hazard vulnerability assessment. Biological or chemical agent disaster drills. Drafting of internal health alert message strategies. Round-the-clock infection control coverage. Outbreak investigation coordination. Developing and monitoring safe specimen collection procedures. Patient management. Developing triage/screening protocols. Patient contamination, patient transport, patient placement and cohorting, isolation and quarantine, discharge management, postmortem care, pet management, developing crisis standards of care that affect infection transmission, negative pressure surge capacity, resource management, anti-infective therapy supply prioritization, managing supply shortages, facility emergency management, food safety, water management, sanitation control, environmental decontamination, occupational health/safety procedures. In addition, the IP will provide input on setting up and running alternate care sites, points of dispensing, and community evacuation shelters, and on communicating infection prevention messages to the general public. Emergency management can be broken into four phases: mitigation, preparedness, response, and recovery. These steps are sequential, as shown in Exhibit 2-27. Note that some forms of emergency management depict a cycle with a fifth step, prevention, following recovery and preceding mitigation. Exhibit 2-27. Emergency management phases. Pre-emergency planning, mitigation, phase. The pre-emergency planning phase, also called the mitigation phase, involves developing an emergency plan based on the facility's specific risks and priorities. A capability self-assessment should be performed, which should be designed to identify any gaps in the facility's risk and preparedness plans. A facility-wide all-hazards risk assessment, also called a hazard vulnerability assessment, HVA, is the first step in developing a healthcare facility emergency management plan. A risk assessment should be conducted in conjunction with a facility assessment. The HVA should clearly identify the facility's top 3 to 5 vulnerabilities and provide a summary of mitigation activities to address these vulnerabilities. The facility HVA should be integrated with community-wide HVAs and should be reviewed annually to keep the information up to date. A healthcare facility's emergency plan must ensure that all information relating to facility operations, organizational structure, emergency response teams, and HCP and patients' families is accurate. Designated personnel should know where and how to turn off electricity, water, gas, and specific equipment. All facilities should have an alternative power weather notification system to stay abreast of emergency weather situations. Plans must account for the provision of treatment for special patient populations during an emergency, including, among others, pediatric, geriatric, and disabled patients. This may also include patients with serious chronic conditions, mental health or addiction disorders. Vulnerable patients may include, but are not limited to, individuals who have the following difficulties, needs or conditions: maintaining independence, communication, transportation, supervision, medical care, children, senior citizens, pregnant women, disabilities, live in institutionalized settings, racial and ethnic backgrounds, have limited English proficiency, non-English speaking, have chronic medical disorders, have pharmacological dependency, elderly persons in hospitals and nursing homes, people with physical and mental disabilities, others with access and functional needs, infants, and children. Emergency preparedness extends to the facility environment and building. Building design, for example, is an important area for consideration, warranting IP involvement in this step. Some designated areas in a hospital could be designed to convert into decontamination or triage areas, such as ambulance bays, or hidden/supplemental oxygen supplies could be built into walls and pillars, which allows for corridors and/or lobbies to be used for more beds and treatment. Designing and installing HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems with the capability to switch airflows allows for airborne agents to be vented safely and entire quadrants of the facility to be isolated. Building maintenance programs should be designed to identify potential problems before they occur and ensure that any emergency-related capabilities are always in working order, for example, by establishing programs for testing, inspection, and preventive maintenance of backup systems and facility safety and security features. Facility security should be a consideration of emergency planning. For example, ongoing security rounds should be maintained. Upgrading and installing access control and perimeter security systems can help maintain security and order during an emergency, as can increasing the frequency of security rounds during an emergency. This should be incorporated into the emergency planning staffing strategies and policies. Hazardous materials policy is an essential consideration with regard to emergency planning and preparedness. Not only must any hazardous materials in use in the facility be identified and their locations tracked, but it should be a priority to reduce the use of hazardous materials, including mercury, whenever and wherever possible. Handlers of these materials will have to be properly trained to prevent spills and leaks, and storage rooms and cabinets must be designed and maintained to ensure proper storage or disposal of these materials. A healthcare facility's emergency operations plan should be coordinated with local emergency management agencies and their management plans, including having in place memoranda of understanding, MOUs, or mutual aid agreements with local and regional healthcare partners. Such agreements allow participating healthcare facilities to work together during an emergency to provide physical facilities and temporary shelter and to share staff, beds, equipment, supplies, and services during a disaster. Personnel and resources preparations. In developing the healthcare facility's pre-emergency preparedness, the following steps relate to personnel and resources needed in emergencies. Review and update inventory/resource lists, including for PPE. Mortuary services should additionally be considered. During mass casualty incidents, MCIs, and outbreaks, the need for proper storage of decedents is critical to minimize the impact and risk of infectious outbreaks. Critical aspects like temperature control, hygiene, and maintaining accurate logs are critical to mitigating these impacts. Ensure the availability of persons needed to execute emergency procedures. Work with the local Office of Emergency Management to identify and obtain available personnel, equipment, supplies, and other resources. Identify HCP who may need childcare, transportation, or other special assistance and arrange for these services. Make an organizational chart for disaster responses using standardized tools. An example is the Incident Command System, ICS, which is a tool for managing the demands of small or large emergency and non-emergency situations. Designate a disaster coordinator and possible alternate staff who can fill the role. Develop and document a procedure for testing generators and supported equipment. Do regular maintenance, keep a 7-to-10-day supply of fuel, document critical items the generator will power, and activate the generator under load per National Fire Protection Association requirements/regional regulations. Ensure a 7-to-10-day supply of food and water for patients and staff and contract with a backup supplier. Emergency communication preparations. During an emergency, clear, accurate, and timely communication is essential. It will ensure informed decision-making and effective collaboration and cooperation and will help to maintain public awareness and trust. The following steps are recommended in relation to emergency communications. Designate a command center location in the facility with computer and phone access, in which to coordinate operations during an emergency. Consider designating an alternate location outside the facility in an evacuation. Identify and appoint a single person as a public information spokesperson. They will be responsible for coordinating communications and engaging with the public, the media, and health authorities throughout the emergency. Key point: note that the IP may receive information requests from the media and other parties in non-emergency situations, in which case they will need to refer to the established organizational structure and follow the proper chain of command to respond to the inquiry. Establish clear lines of communication and mechanism/procedures for communicating with different stakeholders. Example, hospital administration, unit/department heads, and other facility staff, especially information related to patient prioritization. Establish mechanisms for appropriate and timely collection of information that will need to be shared with supervisory stakeholders. Example, government and health authorities. Determine code names for each emergency. Example, code red, code black, with a scripted announcement in plain language to be made in an emergency situation. Consider drafting brief messages/announcements aimed at different audiences in preparation for the most likely disaster or emergency scenarios. For example, different messages for staff, patients, and the public. These should be reviewed and amended in the case of an emergency to ensure that they correctly reflect the information needed by the audience. S. Ensure that patients and their families have emergency contact information for the facility and key staff and specifics about how patients will be evacuated and where they will be taken to aid in reconnecting patients with their loved ones. Ensure that the facility's emergency warning system is functioning. Ensure that communications equipment is reliable and functional, including backup systems, cell phones, landlines, satellite phones, internet connections, two-way radios, and others. Test the reliability of emergency phone trees for contacting emergency personnel and activating emergency procedures. Keep phone trees and contact lists updated. Emergency education, training, drills, and exercise preparation. The following steps should be taken in relation to emergency education and training. Schedule employee orientation and annual and service training on the emergency operations plan. Distribute personal preparedness checklists. Post evacuation routes and the locations of alarms and fire extinguishers. Post telephone numbers of emergency contacts in approved locations. Provide demonstrations of warning systems and proper use of emergency equipment to staff, patients, and patient families. Conduct unannounced fire drills annually according to local, state, and federal requirements. Document each drill, instruction, or event to include date, content, and participants involved. Identify and document any problems. The following steps relate to emergency disaster drills and exercises. Develop objectives for an exercise. That is the components of the emergency management plan that are to be evaluated. These objectives must be quantifiable. Conduct an exercise during which the emergency management plan is practiced. Relevant stakeholder groups, which may vary depending on the nature of the exercise, must be involved. Discuss the findings of the exercise in relation to the identified objectives. This comparison should utilize the evaluation criteria outlined before the exercise took place to determine if goals were met. Identify gaps in preparedness as illustrated by the exercise. Any identified gaps must be documented in an after-action report or exercise summary report. Determine solutions to the gaps identified in the disaster exercise. This process involves brainstorming solutions with stakeholders to identify potential changes to the plan and documenting new or revised procedures in an improvement plan with clear timelines and responsible partners. Update the emergency management plan based on the solutions delineated from the exercise. Educate the staff on updates made to the emergency management plan. Patient evacuation and relocation preparation. A key pre-emergency planning role is to have a plan for evacuating and relocating patients. Evacuations can occur pre- and post-event. Post-event evacuations can occur following advance warning events. For example, when damage to a building is greater than expected after a shelter-in-place event, which necessitates the evacuation of patients and personnel. No advance warning events. For example, earthquakes, building fires, tornadoes, and terrorist attacks. A facility's emergency management plan should include policies and procedures for evacuation. Decision teams need to be provided with education about what to do in the event of an evacuation event. The AHRQ has published recommendations for decision makers that provide an excellent roadmap for assessing the situation in case of a potential evacuation event. First, as soon as possible after the event has occurred, a hospital's building integrity, critical infrastructure, and other environmental factors must be evaluated to determine the hospital's capacity for continuing to provide medical care. Depending on the results of this assessment, decision makers should follow the decision process in the evacuation decision flowchart in Exhibit 2-28. The flowchart allows for the possibility of three observable situations: no threat, immediate threat, or an evolving situation. Exhibit 2-28, Evacuation Decision Flowchart. Source: adapted from Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, Hospital Evacuation Decision Guide. Figure 2, decision makers must be capable and comfortable making the correct decision. Premature or unnecessary evacuation can pose additional risks to patients, especially the more vulnerable, as well as staff. Preparedness phase. IPs should closely monitor disease trends and provide timely, accurate warnings of emerging infections or potential transmission as part of the preparedness phase. Additionally, upon receipt of an internal or external warning of an emergency, the facility administrator or appropriate designee should do the following. Activate the phone tree. Notify the local communications center, local government dispatch, of the emergency. Notify the staff in charge of emergency operations to initiate the emergency operations plan and advise personnel of efforts designed to provide patient safety. If weather-related, closely monitor weather conditions and update department directors as needed. Inform other key agencies, example, fire, law enforcement, public health, of any developing situation and the healthcare facility's protective actions. Review and reevaluate the emergency operations/evacuation plans. Inform patients' families that the healthcare facility has a disaster plan and that the plan includes contacting them. This will help in controlling calls or visits to the facility. Prepare the designated command center for operations and alert staff of plans to open the operations center. Fill the appropriate incident command functions, including a communications branch to handle calls from family members. Control facility access. Confirm that emergency staff are available and facilitate needed care for their families. Check food and water supplies to ensure a 7 to 10-day supply. Store a supply of radios and flashlights. Coordinate with local authorities/agencies and private contacts to confirm availability of resources, example, medical services, response personnel. Confirm transportation agreements with emergency medical service agencies, taxis, tour bus companies, and/or private individuals. Prearrange emergency transportation of non-ambulatory patients, example, dialysis patients, and their medical records. Determine if any patients can be discharged from the facility. For patients who need ongoing care, such as long-term facility residents, determine who could go home with family members who live locally. Determine how patients will be identified during an evacuation. This is especially important for patients who cannot effectively communicate due to physical status or mental acuity issues. Secure the following information with the patient along with their medications: patient name, social security number, photograph, if available, health insurer information, date of birth, recent history and physical, and name and contact information for next of kin or power of attorney. The information and medications could be placed, for example, in a waterproof pouch around the neck. This will be transferred with each patient. Identify HCP who will use condition-appropriate PPE with patients on isolation precautions. Have a plan in place with an alternate pharmacy or alternate source for pharmaceuticals in the event of halted deliveries or the need for backup. Alert HCP and patients and their families of the situation and the immediate actions that are needed to ensure the safety of everyone in the facility. Schedule extended shifts for essential HCP. Place alternate personnel on standby. IPs should stage and perform training on PPE and patient handling concepts if the emergency is one involving a biological incident. Response phase. Rapid detection of a disaster is crucial to a successful response. For all mass casualty incidents, the sooner the incident and at-risk patients are identified, the lower the likely morbidity, mortality, and cost. In response to an actual emergency, the facility administrator or designee should coordinate the following actions. Activate the emergency operations plan and open the command center. Fill the incident command roles to include the general and command staff positions. coordinate actions and requests for assistance with local emergency services and the community, determine requirements for additional resources and update appropriate authorities and/or services, ensure communication with patients' families and physicians, ensure the prompt transfer of appropriate patient records. Patient management is the largest component of disaster response, and as such, it is an essential facet of emergency management. Mass casualty events pose unique challenges to healthcare facilities. How will the facility juggle a large number of acutely ill patients? It will not be business as usual. Rapid triage and health assessment will be critical to decreasing morbidity and mortality. In addition, IPC precautions may need to be implemented in the event of a mass casualty incident involving an infectious agent. Emergency management plans must address surges in infected persons, including procedures for managing potentially contagious patients. Recovery phase. Recovery measures often refer to interventions implemented after the emergency has been declared over, though some recovery strategies may begin as the event is occurring. During the recovery period, the facility or community implements interventions necessary to return to its pre-disaster baseline, that is, recovery interventions. Recovery activities will include the following: establishing short and long-term goals to return the facility or community to the pre-event baseline, evaluating emergency management plan implementation and gaps identified during the response, potentially through the use of after-action reviews or reports, determining potential solutions to identified gaps in the emergency management plan, updating the emergency management plan to reflect lessons learned, educating staff on changes in the emergency management plan, practicing the new emergency management plan. Recovery will also include replenishing stocks of medical equipment and supplies and returning to daily activities and routine reporting structures. Another important component of the recovery phase is responding to the mental health impact of the disaster on the community, including addressing and responding to patients and employees suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Surveillance after a mass casualty incident will likely be critical to decreasing the costs, morbidity, and mortality associated with a disaster, depending on the type of event. This is especially true in the case of an infectious disease disaster, after which identification of new cases will be essential to save lives. Disaster surveillance is based on the same principles as traditional surveillance, but may require a more quick and dirty approach due to the urgency of the situation.